Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy June, happy NBA Finals Day, everybody. This is Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. This episode is brought to you courtesy of our friends and partners over at SeatGeek. Remember, download that SeatGeek mobile app or go to SeatGeek.com and use the promo code LORockets, and you can get a $20 rebate today off of your first SeatGeek purchase. So as we chat on this Thursday, as I said leading off, it's NBA Finals Day. Tonight, after over a week without any basketball at all in either league due to the Warriors and Cavaliers wrapping up their conference finals series so quickly, we're finally back to basketball. Now, I know this is a Rockets podcast. This is not an NBA podcast, so I'm not going to go through the X's and O's predictions in a traditional sense. I am going to say I'm going to enjoy the games because these are two great teams. I do love the sport of basketball. But what I want to do here is look at the finals strictly from a Rockets perspective. I know some folks that listen to this podcast, I would say there are two groups. There are groups of you guys that are just diehard basketball fans that while you like the Rockets, you also follow the league as a whole. And even when the Rockets go out, you're still generally watching the games. There's also another part of it that is simply Houston-only fans, I would say. Of course, you have some appreciation for the sport as a whole, but generally, your focus is on Houston, and with the Rockets out, you've already moved on to the Astros, the Dynamo, whoever else it may be, and I've seen a lot of those on Twitter saying that they've kind of tuned out on the NBA since the Rockets' season ended. And in this preview, I'm going to tell you why I think that's a little bit of a mistake. And to go back, I'll start by showing that last year, in my opinion, there was a paradigm shift in the NBA that affected the Rockets even after they were eliminated in the playoffs, specifically the conference finals and the NBA finals between the Warriors and the Cavs. If the Warriors win that series, I don't think Kevin Durant goes to Golden State. In fact, he's on the record as saying he would not have if the Warriors had won the title. Flip side, you go back to the Western Conference finals. If the Thunder had held that 3-1 lead, not just a 3-1 lead, they had an 8-point lead with 5 minutes to go in Game 6 in Oklahoma City. If that happens, I don't think Kevin Durant is leaving Oklahoma City for Golden State. And yet, because you got the perfect storm, Oklahoma City blew their lead, and then the Warriors blew their 3-1 lead and did not win the championship, so Durant was able to join a team that was not coming off a ring. He would have been just vilified even more than he was for joining a 73-win team that had won two consecutive titles. That gave Durant the opening to go to Golden State, and that is a trickle-down effect to the entire NBA, and especially the Rockets, as they try and put together a contender. Because in my opinion, the Warriors pre-Kevin Durant, certainly they were very, very good. 73-9 is, despite a ring, just an all-time season, and you tip your hat to them for that. But was it sustainable? Were they destined to be just a dominant force for 10 years? I'm not so sure. The reason I say that is the model of the Warriors without Durant, it was very dependent on chemistry. Now, yes, you did have Stephen Curry playing at an MVP level. But Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, yes, they're all-star caliber players. I don't think they're top 10 transcendent talents. And then beyond that, you've kind of built the team. They had phenomenal overall depth, great chemistry, great coaching. And the thing about teams like that, there tends to be a lot of variability. We look at just the Rockets a couple of years ago when they won 56 games, went to the Western Conference Finals in 2015, despite having a roster that was missing some of its marquee players, and like Pat Beverly, Donatas Bonimus in the playoffs, Dwight Howard missed half the regular season. All those factors came together, and despite that, the Rockets still won 56 games. Then you flip it forward to the next year, they went 41-41 with a very similar cast that was even a little bit healthier. And am I saying the Warriors have gone to 41-41? Absolutely not, because 73-9 is very different than 56-26. The starting point for both the Warriors last year and the Rockets a season before that were very different. But I think the overall theme is similar in that when you have built your team on the concept of depth, chemistry, stuff like that. Some years the parts aren't going to fit as well. And when that happens, you may have a fall off. Now, the Warriors were not going to fall off from 73 wins to just the middle of the pack team the way the Rockets did. But even just a little bit of a fall off, back to maybe 60-22, a normal one seed in the West. And that has dramatic implications for teams like the Rockets and other quasi-contenders in the West, because the bar all of a sudden is a lot lower. You flip it forward now, and boy, that bar is so ridiculously high. The Warriors now have two MVP candidates every single year in Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry, both on the right side of 30. Of course, they have Draymond Green and Klay Thompson still there. So that's four probably top 20, at worst, top 25 players in the league, four All-Stars, two MVP candidates every year. That talent is overwhelming. And so you know every year they're going to be a force unless that team breaks up. And if you're the Rockets, I'm not saying you quit. Certainly you keep trying to build a team to get to that level. And among all other teams in the NBA, the Rockets might be one of the best positioned to do that based on having James Harden in the prime of his career and under contract for multiple seasons moving forward. But the point I'm trying to make is this. You look back a year ago, there was a path before Kevin Durant, even without building a super team, where you could see the bar coming back down to somewhere reasonable to where a team like the Rockets could eventually win a ring, say the same way the Mavs did in 2011. The bar was a lot lower back then. Right now, the way things are currently situated, you can't. So yes, those NBA Finals last year, even though the Rockets were long gone, they had a big effect on the Rockets and the rest of the NBA because of the way the result had that trickle-down effect to Durant joining the Warriors. And now the Warriors not just being this team with amazing chemistry and depth, but this team with more talent, more top-end talent, really, than anybody in the history of the game. There is a big impact from those finals. And even if Rockets fans didn't realize it at the time, I think a lot of folks didn't really think that Durant was willing to take the hit to his image of going to a team like Golden State. Yet he did. And so there was a big impact on not just the Rockets, but the entire NBA landscape as a whole moving forward. Now, this year, I don't think the stakes are anywhere near as big. I know technically Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry will be free agents on July 1st. I don't think there's any result in these finals, not even if the Warriors somehow got swept, that would get either of them to even be 1% open to Golden State right now. Curry, it's his franchise, and Kevin Durant, he's not going to move after 1 year. So the stakes are not quite as high as they were a year ago when, depending on the result, it could potentially flip the entire NBA from a team-building standpoint and the bar you have to get to. It's not quite that big. However, I do still think there's relevance, and here's why. Let's look at the Warriors. If they win that series, the narrative is that they have been to three consecutive finals, they've won two of the three, they now have Kevin Durant are even more dominant than before. And hell, the only finals they lost, they blew a 3-1 lead and Draymond Green was suspended for one of the three games they lost. So there were some pretty clear extenuating circumstances there. If the Warriors win this series, they go down as one of the all-time dynasties in the history of the sport. And the four guys leading the way, Durant, Curry, Draymond, Klay, are all under 30. They're all under contract, well, will be, for multiple years going forward. I know Durant and Curry technically aren't, but that's just a technicality. The point is, you are looking at an all-time dynasty. And the trickle-down effect for the Rockets? Yeah, it's there, because if the landscape is like that, I do think that there is... It essentially cast a pall over the entire Western Conference, because how do you compete with that? I do think you'd see more free agents looking at teams like Boston, looking to the East, saying, you know, worst case, at least if I go there, I have a route to get to the NBA final stage. And who knows, maybe someone in the Western Conference can trip up the Warriors along the way. But if you're in the Western Conference and you have a team with the narrative of the Warriors, assuming they win a title this year, there is potential negative effect on the recruitment of a team like the Houston Rockets. The flip side is this. If they lose, they're not going to break up overnight. But first off, around the league, there is hope. Despite all this overwhelming talent, this year they would have had the four-headed monster. Last year they had 73 wins. Despite that, they would have no rings in either year. So there would be hope. Now, I know the team that beat them had LeBron James, who might be the greatest player ever. I'll touch on that in a few minutes. But at a bare minimum, there would be hope that they are beatable. So you can recruit against that. The bigger factor, in my opinion, is if they lose, you are sowing what I would call seeds of discontent. Now, nothing's going to happen immediately, and generally the NBA media narrative would just be on LeBron's greatness if the Cavs end up winning this series. But in Golden State, in that locker room, if a team that great for two consecutive years does not get a ring in either, you are going to have some doubts. Now, I don't think it's going to be down to the overall talent. It's going to be, are we optimizing the talent correctly? Should I be getting a bigger role? Maybe someone like Draymond Green or Klay Thompson that's so content to kind of sit on the sidelines because they're winning in that third or fourth role. Maybe one of them decides, hey, I should be used better. Maybe it's Kevin Durant himself who wants a change in his usage. We saw in Oklahoma City, despite being the lead dog, he wasn't always content with exactly how he was being used. And Durant, I don't think he would leave this offseason, but it's not unfathomable down the road. I think the likely result for Durant is going to be signing 1+1 contracts the way LeBron does, kind of give himself peak leverage. But because of that, because he'd be constantly on one-year deals, he'd always have the option to potentially leave. So I do think if they were to lose this series, it would be a one-off. They would publicly treat it, and I think Steve Kerr, Mike Brown, the executives in Golden State, they would all say, hey, it's the first year of Kevin Durant. There are growing pains. We're going to build on this. But there would be a little bit of doubt, I would say. A little bit of questioning. I don't think anyone would really act on it now. I don't think anyone would report to 2017 training camp in October and act appreciably different. But I do think you'd be sowing the seeds for maybe if something goes wrong again in 2018, then you get to the point, three consecutive years of not winning, that, hey, maybe they do look at, even not the Warriors, maybe some of the players think, hey, I should be used more, or maybe I should look elsewhere. This isn't really working. When you have a team that great, you're not going to break them up immediately. No one's going to leave this summer. They're going to be the prohibitive NBA favorite next year, no matter what happens in this series. However, if they lose, I think you would at least be within one more hiccup or two of at least being able to talk about the dynamics of that team changing. Whereas if they win and they have two titles in 3 years, the other, and the 1 year they didn't have a title being a 73-9 year in which they set the all-time NBA league record for wins, boy, you would not even be close to seeing that team break up. They're all under contract. They can make the math work going forward. So that's why, in my opinion, it's absolutely in the Rockets' interest to see the Cleveland Cavaliers win this series. It's not going to make any drastic changes overnight, although maybe it makes your free agency pitches in July a little more convincing when it comes to how can this, if a free agent asks, how can this team beat the Warriors? Maybe it helps a little bit there. But at least it gives you an opportunity long-term for that bar to come down. Because right now, that's the biggest factor when it comes to building a contender. The Rockets have a really good team, 55 wins, top three in the West. It's just that the bar is so incredibly high by historic standards. The easiest way to build a contender is to get that bar to come down a little bit. And while the Cavaliers winning this series, it wouldn't do that immediately. It would at least give you a path to where maybe in a year or two that could happen. Whereas if the Warriors win, boy, it's tough to see that changing at any point, I would say, in the next 5 years. So there is a lot at stake in this series. Now, if the Warriors do win, it's not like the rest of the league quits. It's not like the Rockets are going to stop trying, because maybe you can build another super team. And certainly James Harden, prime of his career, is one of the few situations where you might be able to do it. But I do think it'd be a lot harder. And then being in the Western Conference, certainly that's a little bit of a drawback as well in that scenario. I don't think it'd be a matter of no one being willing to come to the Rockets, but at this point, the Rockets already have a very good team. To get to that next level, the true difference makers, true upper echelon, all-star level talent in the NBA, they're going to have to be more careful than ever if they want to go to a contender. And so if the Warriors are that dominant, it's going to put the Rockets in a little bit more challenging position, in my opinion. Now, in a moment, I'm going to look at the Cleveland side of the fence. Of course, there are some impacts from Cleveland winning the series, what that would mean for the Rockets, and I'll talk about those in just a moment. But for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our wonderful friends and partners over at SeatGeek, because their sponsorship is a big part of how we're able to bring this show to you so frequently. And well, folks, after talking so long about the Warriors, it kind of brought up another team in the back of my mind. Oh, that's the Houston Astros, who, by the way, at the one-third point of the baseball season are 38-16 on pace for 114 wins. By the way, that's just two behind the all-time record of 116. So the Astros, they're having an incredibly historic season. They might well be baseball's version of the Warriors. And by the way, they play right here in this beautiful city of Houston. So if you guys want to check them out or any other sporting or entertainment event this summer, I strongly encourage you to go to SeatGeek. They are by far my preferred source. When you have a team that's doing well like the Astros, a lot of time the teams themselves, they use this dynamic pricing model. They say there's more demand, which I guess there is. But bottom line, for consumers buying single-game tickets, they jack up those prices as much as they can. Whereas SeatGeek, a lot of the time, these secondary sites, you are buying from the season ticket holders who are getting at a fixed lower rate. So many times, you are cheaper, you're going to get a cheaper deal buying from the secondary market source than you are directly from the box office. And if you're going to look at the secondary market sources, to me, SeatGeek is by far the best. They do all the price comparisons for you, so you know you're getting the best deal, the best bang for your buck. They also grade every ticket from 1 to 100, so you know that you are getting the best possible value for your purchase. They guarantee every ticket so it's secure. And the best part of this, you guys, as my listeners here at Locked On Rockets, y'all all get a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase, and it's so easy. To get that, just download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LO Rockets. From there, SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Rockets today. So jumping back into the show, spent the first 10 minutes or so making the case for why it's a big deal that the Warriors lose. I think it seems pretty evident that while the Warriors are in a historically strong point no matter what in terms of the level that franchise is at, if they lose, at least there's a case for maybe there being a little bit of cracks in the foundation. Not an all-out collapse, but at least you'd have something to watch in the years ahead. Whereas if they win, boy, it's tough to sell that narrative. Let's look at the other side. Let's look if Cleveland wins. First off, yes, they would be back-to-back champions. LeBron has now made the finals, and it feels like a bajillion consecutive years. So, yeah, they'd be a dynasty in their own right. But less of an impact on the Rockets, obviously, they're in the Eastern Conference. If the Cleveland Cavaliers win these finals, they are really two steps removed from being below any other Eastern team. The reason I say that is that not only would they have to fall below the Warriors, they'd also have to fall below the Celtics or any other team in order for another team in the East to have hope. So when you look at these teams like Boston, like Toronto, pretty good teams who have a little bit of cap flexibility and in theory could be in the market for some players the Rockets are going after this summer, if Cleveland wins, the same argument that I was saying that could be used against the Rockets, all of a sudden that can be used against those teams because Cleveland would be so good. I know LeBron is up there in age a little bit. He's now in his low 30s, and so you can make an argument that, well, maybe one of these years he's going to fall off. It's inevitable, especially LeBron in the low 30s. His low 30s is mid to upper 30s for most players because he's been playing 82-plus games since he was 18 years old right out of high school. So he's got a lot of mileage. At some point, he is going to fall off. But if the Cavaliers win this series, if they are better than these historically great Warriors for two consecutive years, then their A game is so strong that for a team like Boston or Toronto to jump Cleveland, essentially Cleveland would have to drop two rungs. They'd have to A, be worse than the Warriors, and B, then fall off and be worse than the Celtics, the Raptors, whoever it may be in the East. So I think it helps you in terms of free agency negotiations. If Cleveland is that strong, boy, it's tough to see a path for any other team in the Eastern Conference to make a compelling case to free agents that we can be a contender here. I know we've said Boston's just kind of waiting out LeBron, but if Cleveland wins again, the waiting out LeBron, in my opinion, it's going to take even longer than perhaps even any of the optimists had thought just a few months ago when the Cavaliers wrapped up kind of an uninspiring regular season, 51-31. If they can turn it on the way they have for most of these playoffs, and if their A game is enough to beat the Warriors again, boy, that cuts against the narratives in the Eastern Conference big time. The other factor that I think could benefit the Rockets in this scenario, if Cleveland wins, the storyline, the narrative, whatever you want to call it, is going to be about an individual player rather than a team. It would be about LeBron James. And in my opinion, I'm just going to put this out there. If LeBron wins this series, he has passed Michael Jordan to be the greatest player in the history of the sport. Now, I know if he wins the series, he would just have four titles compared to six for Jordan. But when you look at the totality of his career, how many times he's been to the finals, I think if he beats a competition this high, the Warriors, these Warriors, for two consecutive years, to me, that's a better resume than anyone in the history of this league because you do have to adjust it for competition a little bit. And if he's able to get two rings against the Warriors with a supporting cast, I'm not going to say they're bad, but certainly Kyrie, Kevin Love, they're not really two-way players. There's a reason why they were just 51-31 or whatever it was in the regular season. The talent, while pretty good, is certainly not overwhelming. If Cleveland wins this series, the storyline is going to be about LeBron James, just his transcendent individual dominance, best player of all time. And by the way, don't ever come at me, kind of related to what I was saying about all his finals appearances. Some of the worst takes I've ever seen are about essentially his four finals losses. I think, 2007 with the Cavs. What was it? The two times he lost with the Heat, and then 2 years ago when the Cavs lost to the Warriors. Folks, it's not a weakness to lose in the finals. One of the dumbest arguments I've ever seen in sports. You see this in the NFL a lot, comparing Tom Brady and Joe Montana. Well, Brady's won 5 Super Bowls, but he's also lost 2. He's 5-2, whereas Joe Montana is 4-0. Folks, the other seasons that the player didn't get to the Super Bowl, it's not like they didn't play. They just lost before the Super Bowl. So are you really going to say that Jordan's legacy is better than LeBron because he lost in the Eastern Conference playoffs to the Pistons rather than losing in NBA Finals? Or are you going to say that if Jordan had beaten the Pistons and lost in the Finals to the Lakers in those late 80s seasons, that his legacy would have been worse? That's ridiculous. That's the very definition of an arbitrary cutoff. So when you see that, I just want to roll my eyes and move on. Those people, 9 times out of 10, either they're misinformed or more likely than not, they're just trolling. Because it's not a weakness to get to the finals and lose. Now, yes, at some point you do need to get the wins, but if LeBron gets to 4 the same way Tom Brady getting to 5, folks, the record not being, them not batting 1,000 in these NBA finals, that's not a negative at all. If anything, it's a positive because they got there and they didn't lose earlier. So don't be one of those people. Yes, LeBron has lost in the finals a few times, but if he gets his 4th and this is his 8th time to be in the finals and he gets his second NBA finals win against, well, I wouldn't even say his second, it'd really be his 3rd against a transcendent team, because I would say the 2013 Spurs were also incredibly good themselves. So I would say 3 of those 4 titles that they've gotten came against really, really good teams. And the other one in 2012 came against the Thunder when they had Durant, Harden, Westbrook all together. So if you have 4 rings against the competition that good, this isn't, I'm not going to say the Bulls got lucky, but in the 90s, some of the teams they played, especially the Jazz in the 97, 98, I tend to agree with Bill Simmons, who said those Jazz teams were not especially good. They just kind of waited out the Western Conference. The Rockets, a few other teams had faded due to age. And so the Jazz were, kind of the best team that was left. Does that mean they were actually a great team? No, it doesn't. And really, I think if the Bulls had played the Rockets had a little bit better luck with health. I think the Rockets with Hakeem in his prime would have had a damn good shot at beating Chicago. And of course, that would have hurt his legacy a little bit. But the stars never aligned for the Bulls and Rockets to both be an NBA Finals team in the same season. And so that's all a hypothetical. But getting back to the point, yeah, this is a chance for LeBron, and he's going to be playing all out for it, to secure his legacy as the greatest player in the history of the game. And what does that mean for the Rockets, the rest of the NBA? Well, yeah, he's going to get the attention for that. But it's easier to recruit against an individual player than it is a team. Because, well, first off, individual players in the East, as I said earlier. But beyond that, players do fall off. That stuff happens. We do know, as I said earlier, LeBron's now in his low 30s, and the mileage on his body, he's really in the mid to upper 30s. At some point, Father Time catches everyone. So you can say, hey, James Harden, he's 27 now, going to be 28 next season. We have a chance to be the team of the next generation. That sort of thing. You can make that argument. There's also the chance, what if he just happens to get hurt? Something happens. Whenever your dominance is tied to just one specific player, while yes, the team is going to be really great, it doesn't necessarily change the entire paradigm of the league as a whole, because there are limitations to one guy. As opposed to the Warriors as a team, where you have 4 top 25 players, 2 MVP candidates. We saw, even before Kevin Durant got back in late March, once they got used to playing without Durant for a couple of weeks, when he was out for a little over a month with that knee injury, boy, the Warriors, we saw him twice against the Rockets in late March. They looked really, really good. It took them a little while to find their bearings. But when you have an overall team, a depth of talent that is that much, 4 All-Stars, 2 MVP candidates, it's not like you can just have one guy have a little bit of slippage and then the entire operation kind of falls apart. Or you have one guy that kind of slips on Domantas Sabonis' sweat the way Stephen Curry did in the 2016 playoffs, and all of a sudden that can change everything. When you have that much depth the way the Warriors do, it is overwhelming. The Cavaliers, yeah, LeBron's great, and everyone can appreciate his greatness, but it's not overwhelming when it comes to one player. And then you combine that with the realities of a Western Conference team versus an Eastern Conference team, and folks, I think it's pretty simple. It's definitely in the Rockets' best interest for the Cavaliers to win this series, and hopefully that starts tonight. Now, before I sign off, one more final note I want to talk about. We've kind of danced around free agency a lot of this episode. We talked about it a lot recently, the possibilities. Didn't want to talk too much because at this point, we're all guessing. We're all waiting for more concrete rumors to get out there. There have been a few things this week, like Danilo Gallinari, who forward in the Nuggets. I think we all know has a long history of Mike D'Antoni and could be a target for the Rockets. He's going to decline his option and enter free agency. But folks, these days, everybody that has an option is going to enter free agency for the most part. Everyone wants a part of these new NBA revenues that are just soaring. So not going to make a big deal of that because we all knew that was coming. If someone can become a free agent, they are. And they might be wanting to leave. They might just want more money. But with the dynamics the way they are economically, that's not really news. So I didn't want to make a big deal out of that. Trying to wait until we have a little more concrete rumors about players the Rockets might be interested in or vice versa, players that might have interest in playing for Mike D'Antoni's system in Houston before we talk about possibilities. But the one thing I did want to hit on, I'm already seeing a little bit, and I think the media kind of starts this narrative at the national level, the concept of lateral moves and the concept of some of the players on the market. Primarily, we're talking the upper tier like Gordon Hayward, Blake Griffin, Serge Ibaka, all three of those Utah, Clippers, Toronto teams that are pretty good. Now, the Rockets were slightly better than them, but not like eons apart or anything like that. And you're saying not just in context with the Rockets, but a lot of teams around the league saying, well, obviously there's not going to be room for them to join Golden State or Cleveland. And if not for that, well, why don't they just stay put because it would be a lateral move? That is absolutely a fallacy. And I want to throw that out there very quickly. And in some ways, I think that's why people were shocked that Durant was so open to leaving last summer. People looked at the situation he had in Oklahoma City where he had a mid-50s win. Mid-50s wins, they took the Warriors to Game 7 and said, why would he leave? Well, folks, he was open to leaving because he wanted a better fit for himself. And it wasn't just the Warriors he was looking at. He talked with teams like the Celtics, the Heat. From all we heard during the season, it was actually the Celtics, not the Thunder, who finished second in the Durant sweepstakes last summer. And the Celtics were a worse team than the Thunder and last season. And the fallacy is this. The fallacy is you have these media types, the ones writing the preview articles, talking on Twitter, all that kind of stuff, that compare, say, the Jazz with Gordon Hayward to the Rockets without. And that is a fallacy because the comparison the player is making is, hey, here's what the Jazz look like with me, and I'm Gordon Hayward in this hypothetical, and here's what the Rockets would look like with me. So you're not comparing the Jazz final record to the Rockets 55-27 because the Rockets 55-27 did not have Gordon Hayward. You're comparing what the Rockets hypothetically would be if Hayward were under contract. And that's something that a lot of media, I don't know if it's necessarily they don't get it. I think part of it is that there's kind of this innate bias. Everyone likes these players to stay put because I get it. It's if you're covering the league as a whole, if you're not really invested in any one particular team, it's not fun to see a player leave, especially if it's a smaller market like, say, Utah or Toronto. Because like if it's Toronto, you traded all these assets during the season to land Ibaka. If it's Utah, obviously you drafted Hayward. You're willing to offer him the max, all this kind of stuff. And it's kind of like you can invest everything, do everything right, and then the player still leaves. That's not fun. People like the idea of homegrown talent. And I understand why. I'm not arguing against it. The league is more fun. It gives everybody hope. If you can identify, you know, if you can identify the right players in the draft and or at the trade deadline with who you target and you do all that stuff right, and then you can keep the player long term. It's not exactly fun if you think you can do everything right, but then whenever the player is free, he can just bolt for the Warriors on the coast the way Kevin Durant did to Oklahoma City after the Thunder drafted and developed him for his entire career. That's not a fun narrative. And so I think media around the league, they tend to kind of twist things to that standpoint because a lot of folks are kind of wishing the player stays. And it's not just that. Now, certainly the player can also get a little more money from staying with his original team. But I think it's been shown in lots of cases recently, including Durant, players are willing to take slightly less money if it gives them a better chance to win. And of course, it's not just about winning, but you win more, you get more endorsements. There's a whole trickle-down effect that comes with that. But between the money and I think a desire for players to stay put, I think sometimes some of the arguments you see from national writers can be a little bit disingenuous because the player isn't going to be looking at his team with him to the team he'd have to hypothetically be joining without him. He's going to say, hey, how does this team look with me on it for both? And so if the Rockets were a slightly better team already than someone like Utah or the Clippers or Toronto, whoever it may be, without Ibaka, Hayward, Griffin, these are just hypotheticals I'm throwing out there, then boy, they could be a really better team hypothetically if that player were to join. Now again, I'm not saying I think it's going to happen. Nothing is that easy. And the Rockets would have a ton of salary cap trouble to make all of that work. So none of it would be easy. I'm not saying the Rockets are going to acquire one of those guys. I just wanted to kind of push back against the national narrative. Now, it may not be fun, because certainly you see all these stars teaming up arguments. That's also the same argument that you could use to have them go somewhere else and create a super team just like the Warriors. Maybe that happens somewhere besides Houston. So it's not always good. I'm not saying it's necessarily fun or for the betterment of the league, but from a Rockets-only perspective, the pitch they're going to be making to free agents this summer, I think it's going to be a little stronger than what some of these national writers, talking heads on Twitter are saying, because I think there's kind of just this innate desire to see these top-of-the-line free agents stay put, assuming their teams want them to stay. I think that's generally how fans that aren't really invested in the particular team, I think generally they like seeing stars stay put, and I think that kind of filters into their assessment of the overall situation. Whereas the reality, folks, the Rockets have a pretty convincing case. Anyway, that's it for my tangent there. As always, appreciate you guys tuning in and listening to me here at Locked On Rockets, the home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. If you want to follow me on Twitter as I react constantly to the finals over the next couple of weeks, you should do that at Ben Dubose or the show at Locked On Rockets. Also email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. If you've got questions, suggestions, or inquiries about how to become a potential advertiser for this show, just as SeatGeek was today. Remember, download the SeatGeek mobile app and use the promo code LORockets. You can get a $20 rebate today off of your first purchase from SeatGeek. So as we move forward, I think we're going to talk a little bit less about the NBA Finals. I can't say I won't mention it at all, because certainly the end result is going to impact the Rockets. But in terms of the game-by-game minutiae, I'm not going to be getting into that here. This is a Rockets podcast, and in the days ahead, we'll be getting back to specific targets for them in the draft, free agency, the rest of the summer. For now, before the finals start, I just wanted to give an overall overview of where the Rockets are at, where the league as a whole is at, and how I think the results of this series might impact the Rockets moving forward. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. Hopefully you guys are cheering on the Cavs just as I am tonight. And, well, we'll be talking again in just a couple of days, getting back to full-on Rockets draft and free agency coverage over the next few weeks. So for now, enjoy the finals. Have a good night, and I'll be talking with you again very soon right here on Locked On Rockets.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.